This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Shahad Kutan and you're listening to The Morning Run. It's now time for Pressing Matters, the show that takes you beyond the headlines of the day. Today on the show, we put science journalism under the microscope. Are Malaysian journalists doing enough to report scientific news and to report it well? And how can scientists help them do it better? Recently, Melissa Idris spoke to Nina Azra Razali, head of the Bureau of International Affairs at the Academy of Sciences, Malaysia.
Nina, welcome to Pressing Matters. Good to have you here. I came across this workshop that you guys did recently with MITE, so Malaysian Industry Government Group for High Technology, teamed up with British Council and the Academy of Sciences Malaysia to organise a workshop to bring together journalists and scientists to discuss how we can improve science reporting in Malaysia. Let's find out a bit more about that workshop. I mean, tell us how it went. It was a 3-day workshop and you had a whole range of scientists as well as media representatives attend.
Okay, so the workshop is a 3-day workshop. So some of the things that we discussed is on the best way to communicate, one of the tips to communicate. So how do scientists communicate? How do journalists communicate? So from the aspect of journalists, they should understand the area of expertise from the scientists. And also from the scientist's perspective, they should be more approachable to the journalists. Mm-hmm. So in a sense that they should be more... The problem with scientists is that they tend to use a lot of jargons, a lot of technicalities. And how do they compress those technical jargons?
So I'm going to look at it from the perspective of a journalist because that's all I know. Okay, that's my entire career has been in journalism. Yeah. So for instance, if I was to report on a medical issue, I'm not a medical professional. I have no expertise in this area.
Yes.
So I will just purely rely on the scientists to tell me what's happening and not change all that much my reporting. So I will report perhaps word for word, even using the jargon, I would say.
Yes.
Because I don't want to change the context or the meaning of the story. And I think most journalists are reluctant to, say, do away with jargon, especially if they don't know if they're changing the meaning of what the scientists said.
Okay, so in order to do that, the journalists should understand what the jargons mean in the first place. So, like, for example, if a scientist provides a certain term that the journalist wouldn't understand, it should be best that the journalist should understand what it means so that the journalist can translate that jargon into a more layman term and verify with the scientists if whatever they understand from the scientists, is it correct? Is it the right thing that the scientist is trying to convey? Yeah.
Right. So what were some of the topics that you guys discussed at the workshop? I mean, which areas of science did you cover?
Okay, so the workshop, our team was changing the climate between scientists and journalists.
Changing the climate between scientists and journalists?
Yeah, that was the theme of the workshop.
Does it have anything to do with climate change?
Yes. Our facilitators are actually from Institute of Environmental Analytics of University of Reading. So they are subject matter experts in environmental science.
So talk to me about climate change and science and the media as an intermediary between the public and scientists. Has the reporting of climate change been satisfactory so far?
Okay, so in terms of climate change, we have skeptics in climate change, for example. Like, there are people out there who doesn't believe in climate change. They don't think that it's happening. They don't think that it's there. So with science reporting, with journalists, they should convey the information from the scientists in a comprehensible manner. The public should understand that climate change is really happening, for example.
Why do you think there are climate change deniers? Got the facts. Yeah. You've got people who've spent their entire careers looking at this, you know, years and years of scientific research. And yet you've got climate change deniers. I mean, people who are not involved in, say, the oil and gas business, for instance, often, you know, climate change deniers are tied very closely with the fossil fuel industry. But what about the layperson? There are lay people who are climate change deniers, despite scientific evidence that points otherwise.
Okay, more often than not, issues like climate change, they are deniers, they are skeptics. It's probably because it's not relatable to them. Okay, the climate is changing, so what has that got to do with me, for example?
Yeah, how can I change that?
How can I change that? Maybe it's the will of God, for example. So a lot of people, when it comes to this kind of issues, they have mental shortcuts. So they tend to believe in something based on their own view, based on maybe perspective, based on their own perspective. It could be based on upbringing, it could be based on religious perspective.
Or their own worldview,
yes,
right?
Their own worldview, yes. They refuse to believe in it. And maybe it doesn't affect them that much.
Right,
because climate change is a long-term effect. So maybe it wouldn't affect them in their lifespan. It doesn't matter to them.
Okay.
But they should understand that this will trickle down to the next generation and it goes on. So that's one of the reasons why there are climate change skeptics out there.
So when we talk about journalists who cover climate change stories, especially here in Malaysia, how can they work better with scientists? What can scientists do to help journalists cover more stories on climate change?
So what the scientists should do is that they should be more open to journalists. For example, they should be... They shouldn't fear the journalists.
Do you think there's fear?
There is fear. There's
a
little bit of fear with scientists and media. Not just scientists, like a lot of other parties are
Why do you think that is?
Because they fear that whatever they try to convey is misinterpreted. The facts that they provide might be distorted. Because the thing with scientists, they provide, they look for data, they give data, they give facts, they give evidence. But how it is interpreted, it also depends on the media.
Well, you know, I have to say that there's also the equal amount of fear on the media side
towards the scientists,
towards scientists and scientific issues or scientific news, because the media will go, "Oh, I don't know anything about that." So rather than misquote or misinterpret the scientists, I will quote the scientists word for word.
Okay.
And that's how you get, kind of really dry and jargon-filled news stories, which at the end of the day doesn't serve the reading public, right? So at the end of the day, the public doesn't get the news that they deserve and doesn't know about the issues that they should know about. So on both parts, because of fear, that causes, I guess, a lack of good scientific reporting in Malaysia.
So that is one of the reasons why we actually hosted the science journalism workshop in the first place. It's to bridge the gap between scientists and journalists so that they can have a ground, like a platform for them to communicate. So what we hope at the end of the workshop is that for scientists to be more open to journalists and journalists to be more open to scientists as well. So we try to make them engage more.
Right.
So perhaps in the future, they can talk to their scientist colleagues or they can talk to their journalist colleagues and say, "Oh, scientists are not so bad and journalists are not so bad."
<That's> so, <true. laughs>
yeah.
To educate.
So, yes,
and at the end of the day, the public benefits, right?
The public benefits out of it, because what the scientists does, they provide facts, figures, data, and the journalists translate this for the public to understand.
Mm.
So each of these scientists have a social responsibility to provide the correct evidence. And so does the journalist. They have to. They have a social responsibility to interpret it correctly so that the public would understand and accept it to make informed decisions.
Mm.
Okay, so for example, I'll give you an example. Like one of the main miscommunication issues in science is, for example, probably drug formulation.
Oh, what is that?
Drug formulation, meaning, for example, like scientists would formulate a certain drug, for example, and then perhaps this breakthrough in science will be reported by the media, okay? And there is a fine line between treatment and cure. So sometimes the media might misinterpret the scientists by saying, okay, this drug can cure cancer.
Right.
When what it really means, when what the scientist really was trying to say is that this drug can help to treat cancer. So there's a fine line between those two.
And it's an important distinction
to make, distinction, because you don't want to give false hope to the public. You don't want to say, oh, and then all this, the public would say, oh, this drug can cure cancer. And then you have a lot of people hoping that this drug can help, can cure cancer, when in fact it's just a form of treatment. And another issue in science miscommunication is the generation of fear. Okay, for example, we have when you talk about nuclear energy, the public would mostly be afraid of nuclear.
Right, yeah, it has a perception.
Yeah, there's a perception.
That's a really good point because there are some issues that are so polarizing, like you said, with, for instance, with climate change, with health issues like vaccination, for instance.
Yes, vaccination.
And nuclear energy is one that is very polarizing as well, right?
Yeah, for example, like vaccination, and then like a few years ago, was it, that people think that vaccination can cause autism.
Correct, yes. Yes. That's still a misconception that's not been corrected, right?
Yes, it's still there. But that's the thing. There's a fine line between causation and correlation. So a lot of things have a correlation to it, but it's not necessarily a causation. Like vaccination does not necessarily cause autism, but it may correlate to autism. For example, A does not necessarily lead to B or C. Sometimes A plus B equals to C. Mm. So there are factors that may, you know, correlate to autism. Like you can have factors in vaccination. Okay, maybe vaccination has a correlation to autism, but it can also be a mix of everything. It can also be like environmental factors, genetic factors.
One of the contributing factors.
Yes, one of the contributing factors. So that's one of the things that the journalists, the media should pick up. Like they shouldn't just mention A causes B. So they should have all this into place. They should consider all the factors.
Nina, do you think that the scientific community has done enough to correct these misconceptions that the media has propagated? I mean, when they read articles that say, you know, has misinformation that could mislead the public, do you think the scientific community has come up strongly enough to say, well, actually, that's wrong. This is the truth. This is the scientific evidence.
Okay, in that sense, maybe there are some scientists out there who correct the media, but there is not enough platform for them. There is not, there is no suitable platform for them to engage with the journalists and for the journalists to engage with the scientists.
We'll have more with Nina Razali from the Academy of Sciences Malaysia on Pressing Matters in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. Melissa Idris continues her conversation with Nina Azra Razali, head of the Bureau of International Affairs at the Academy of Sciences Malaysia, about the landscape of science journalism in Malaysia.
Just before the break, Nina, you said something quite interesting about how there isn't quite a platform for scientists to come and correct misinformation about scientific issues. How is it done in other countries? Because, you know, science reporting in the US, in the UK, is wonderfully done. You see the BBC, for instance, has a wonderful science desk in the US. They tackle really difficult issues when it comes to climate change, when it comes to health and medical issues. What about in Malaysia? Are we lacking a certain kind of mutual meeting place between scientists and media?
Definitely. We are lacking a suitable platform for them to discuss. But in other countries, for example, in the UK, they have this thing called Science Media Centre. So this is one of the best platforms for the scientists and journalists to engage with each other in discussing scientific issues.
Right.
So what this Science Media Centre does is that it provides a platform for them to engage, for the scientists to provide their facts and figures, and for the journalists to pick up from. And another thing that the Media Centre does is that it has a database.
It has
a database for experts. So when in times of crisis, for example, the journalists can actually go through the database and look for the suitable expert in that issue.
I have to say, my personal experience, and I'll give you one recently, when the North Korean assassination case came about and the autopsy report said it was VX nerve agent that was the poison that was used. We struggled here at BFM to find a scientist that could explain to us what VX nerve gas was.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, we had to get a foreign source.
All
So, again, you know, a lack of understanding from us, from the media as to what this is. You know, there was a lot of panic. Is it something from the movie with Nicolas Cage called The Rock? You know, we went that far.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, we didn't know where to go. And I think having a database would greatly improve our reporting on scientific issues.
Okay, so the Academy of Sciences Malaysia is actually in the pipeline to establish our own Science Media Centre. Of course, this is very still premature to say to announce anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
but we are still in the planning stage of having our own science media center.
That's great
news. So that's actually one of the things that we're looking at throughout the workshop. We are sort of trying to see who are the people that we can engage to bring into the science media center eventually. Mm. But we have only started this very earlier this year. But previously, what the idea came about a couple of years ago at the APEC level, actually.
Wow.
Okay, so we had an APEC meeting, and one of the things that we thought were like to have an APEC science media center. But then we thought, wait, we don't even have our own local science media center. Why are we thinking so far ahead? Right. So we will bring it down to the local level.
Okay.
So and that's one of the things that we wish to have as an output from this science journalism workshop, so that we will eventually engage the right people from the journalism side and from the scientific community to be part of the science media center in Malaysia.
Well, that's wonderful. That's really good news. But I do have to ask, when I'm thinking about science journalism in Malaysia, right, and the level of science journalism in Malaysia, there's not much of it to begin with, right? There's a lack of reporting on scientific news. And I wonder whether that's because on the media side, we don't really understand science, or whether on the public side, that's just not what they want to read.
I think it's a bit of both, because the media provides what the public needs, and the scientists are just doing their own thing.
Essentially making the world a better place.
Essentially making the world a better place, but they have their own niche areas, of course.
And but do you think the public is interested in reading about scientific news?
The public is not well versed in science in the first place.
Right.
So another thing that the Academy of Sciences Malaysia is championing is science enculturation. So
what is that?
Science enculturation is to promote science in the public, to make the public more well-versed in science, to be more science literate. So we lack that in Malaysia. We need more scientific minds in Malaysia.
You know, in the US, they have all these celebrity scientists, right? You've got Carl Sagan, you've got Bill Nye, the science guy. Do you think in Malaysia we have enough of these celebrity scientists to make science sexy for the young folk, to make science subjects, learning about science, palatable and interesting?
We do have a few celebrity scientists as well in Malaysia, but perhaps they were not very well promoted in the media. For example, from the Academy of Sciences Malaysia, we have Datuk Mazlan.
Who's
an astrophysicist.
Yes.
Yeah, and she was on BFM
recently,
a week ago.
Yes.
Yeah. And we have Prof. Dato' Asma Ismail. She's our first woman president in the Academy of Sciences Malaysia. And also we have Dr. Abhimanyu, who's a young scientist in the Academy of Sciences Malaysia.
Okay, so we do have champions in the science field.
Yes,
okay.
We do. But perhaps the media should promote them more, promote our scientists more. We do have good scientists in Malaysia. We do have good science experts. But the media needs to
shine
a little bit of limelight
on them a bit more.
So perhaps in that sense, the public would be more interested and the children will be more inspired to be scientists eventually. Yes.
That is the hope for sure.
Yes.
I've been speaking to Nina Azra Razali, head of the Bureau of International Affairs at the Academy of Sciences Malaysia. They are doing all they can to promote good best practices in science reporting here in Malaysia. Nina, wish you all the best. Keep us in the loop for that database. It sounds interesting.
Yes.
Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Okay, thank you, Lisa.
I'm Melissa Idris for Pressing Matters on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.